Nothing is Real is powered by Acast. Hello and welcome to Nothing is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do we really know? My name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And we're live on a hard drive from Dublin and Belfast. Today we're going to talk about Beatle books again. We did a Beatle books episode in season one and we covered a lot of ground, but this is somewhere that has a lot more ground to cover. And I think it's fair to say, Stephen, when we put out the books episode last year, it was probably the first time I realised that people were listening. We got an awful lot of feedback about it. Oh, I liked this book. Why didn't you mention that book? So I think it's good to act on that feedback.
Yes, we got a lot of good comments, and we got a lot of comments along the lines of, why did you not mention this book? This is my favorite book. Why do you not like this book? And it's been fairly consistent, certainly on Facebook, with people saying, what would you recommend if I wanted to find out more about this or that particular aspect? So I think there's you can never have too many books about the Beatles.
You can never have too many books about the Beatles. And the answer to the question of why didn't we mention your favorite book last year was because we forgot. We weren't we weren't on top of our brief, maybe.
Or perhaps it wasn't our favorite book.
Exactly. So we're going to dig into that. So you can go back and listen to our first episode last year, because we look at some of the broad biographies, and you know, we probably start all these episodes by saying, you know, go off and read the Mark Lewison book if you want to get the massive, comprehensive overall history. So we've picked out a few headings this year that we're going to kind of run on. We're going to talk about books that have come out in the 12 months since we last did a book episode. We're going to talk about one or two upcoming books. We're going to talk about some of those books that we did overlook. We're going to talk about books that are kind of in the Beatle universe, about people who kind of might have been in and around the Beatles at the time, which are an interesting to read. And then right at the end, Stephen's books to avoid, where he's really going to give it to some poor...
Give it to somebody. Somebody's going to get picked on this year.
Who's he going to pick on this year? Who's going to win the Philip Norman Prize for books we don't like about the Beatles? Right. I mean, there has been a good... If we start off by looking at books that came out in the last year, there's been two kind of big... bios about 1969, and we talked a little about this in our year-end episode last year, but this Ken McNabb's And in the End and Ken Womack's Solid State, and we are both fans of Ken McNabb's And in the End. It's a good book.
It's a great book. I really enjoyed this book. I picked it up not really knowing what line it was going to take. It's a story that we all know the story. But what Ken McNabb does, he constructs this really engaging, genuinely entertaining narrative out of a story that we all know.
Yes.
So you sort of find yourself, it's almost like a novel in the sense that you're waiting to see what happens next, and you're really hoping it's going to turn out differently at the end. It's my only slight, I'm a big Yoko fan. I think he's slightly dismissive of Yoko, and we're kind of spearheading the
Yoko revival.
But that aside, I think that says more about me than it does about Ken McNabb. I really like this book.
I really liked it too. And again, sometimes when you've read a lot of Beatle books, you start off on one and you're like, oh, do I really have to read this book? You perhaps have more patience than I do for this kind of thing, Stephen. But yeah, this is a book that follows, you know, there's 12 chapters, January, February, March, April. It follows just 1969. It's a great, I think I said this before, it's a great companion book to the Beatles 66 book.
Yes.
Where you're kind of looking at a month on month. And the thing that I got out of it that I hadn't really gotten out of any book before is it's great at drawing out the story of how John Lennon and Yoko go from being befuddled addicts essentially in January 1969 to meeting world leaders for world peace in December 1969. It really pulls out that story really, really well. And if you kind of want to get a sense of, it's really a John Lennon in 69 is the book inside this book that's really interesting.
Yes, that's really the core story within the story. It's a rare book that I can sort of say, look, I absolutely wholeheartedly recommend this book. And I think it's just come out in paperback. Or at least there's a paperback edition now available. So there's no excuse. Every home should have one.
Every home should have one. And the flip side book of that is Ken Womack's Solid State. And to be honest, I started this one and I was like, I'm going to park this. I really couldn't get through Solid State.
really, because I had the same the same feeling with it, but I actually thought it would probably appeal more to you than to me, because it was dealing with a lot of the, well, a lot
the
of,
techie
the, kind
stuff.
Of tech, the techie stuff.
Yeah.
This is a book that I really wanted to love. I do like Ken Womack. He's very well respected. I got several of his books. I really enjoyed his George Martin biography. This, I just, maybe I just read too many Ken Womack books all in too short a time.
Yeah.
It seemed to be a little bit of duplication with other works, which is maybe inevitable. You're looking at the same story from different angles. It's a very familiar story. When it wasn't telling me a familiar story, the technical stuff was just above my head, I'm afraid. I genuinely thought you would like it for that.
I think I will go back to it, you know, and probably because I got to Ken McNabb's book first, I might have been in the headspace to read Ken Womack. So I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it didn't capture me at the time.
Yeah.
And I also have to put up my hands and say I haven't read the George Martin book, and I probably should read those first because they seem very comprehensive.
Yes, they are extremely comprehensive. Again, there was a little bit of, inevitably, there's a little bit of recycling and covering old ground.
Yes.
What I found most interesting about the George Martin books was the sort of the early years of his life and sort of his relationship with his wife and his first family. And then you sort of get into the Beatles recording years.
Yes.
And you're sort of going over ground that you know. And again, inevitably, the post-Beatles years don't take up as much time as
it's the Beatles years. That's always the sinking feeling in a biography when you're reading a biography about anybody and it's not the Beatles. And, you know, say it's a big 400-page book and you get 300 pages in and you're only about 10% of the way through their career. It's like, and then they release Sticky Fingers and you're like, really? You're going to put the next 40 years in 100 pages? And granted, that's just the way of life. You know, you're maybe for all of us, your 20s are more interesting than your 40s. You know, when you and I
are the only people that want to know what Ringo Starr was doing when he was 36.
That is true. Yes. If you'd buy a book if it was called Ringo Starr in the 80s, that's a book that's waiting to be written.
I absolutely would buy that book, but I'll buy anything.
So there are the first two books. The other books that come out in the last year, let's talk about Peter Asher's A to Z.
Yes.
What's your take on that?
I really want to be able to recommend this, but I really, really can't. This is a book, I heard that this was coming.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to it. You know, Peter Asher is the sort of insider's insider.
Yeah.
His sister was Jane Asher, Paul's girlfriend. He worked for Apple. He recorded as one half of Peter and Gordon. He helped specifically James Taylor, you know, and he uses James Taylor on the front cover. Who better than Peter to tell us these stories? And he must have fantastic stories to tell. He just doesn't tell them.
Yeah, and it's an odd format, this book. It's A to Z.
Yeah, so literally it's A is for Apple, E is for Eleanor Rigby, X is for Paul McCartney on The X Factor. It's seriously, it's so
that key moment in his career.
Yeah, it's so contrived as to be laughable. And as a result, it sort of skips around chronologically.
Right.
There's just no sense to it. I also made the mistake of picking up an American edition of the book or wherever I ordered it from. And it's the cheapest, nastiest cover.
Oh, really?
Paper.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
This is a book that you could kind of dip into.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a book I could recommend, and it's so disappointing. I really want to.
Yeah. Has he written any other books, Peter Asher? He has, hasn't he?
I don't know.
I can't think of any off the top of my head. If that's his contribution, it's a bit disappointing.
It is extremely disappointing. And my last comment that I scribbled down here was X should have been for the X-ray picture sleeve on John's Cold Turkey single rather than Paul McCartney on that's, you know, he needs me to come and edit the next book.
another book that came out in the last year was The Polaroid Diaries of Linda McCartney's Polaroid Pictures. A bit of a coffee table book, that one. Doesn't really have a narrative story, but that was, yeah, there was Linda McCartney exhibitions going on back in the time when the world used to have exhibitions that we could go to.
When we could travel. We had great plans.
We had great plans to go see the Linda McCartney exhibition.
To go see the Linda McCartney exhibition. I believe it moved from Glasgow's Kelvin Gallery. It's now, or it was
Kelvin Grove.
In Kelvin Grove. It's in Liverpool.
Yes.
So that was our plan, our road trip for this year.
Yes. And so that's been put on pause. Two great places, Liverpool and Glasgow. And then probably the last book that we should talk about that's come out, and this is a 2020 book, is Craig Brown's 1, 2, 3, 4. And yeah, this is a book that everybody seems to love. Certainly you and me live in a Beatles Twitter bubble, social media bubble.
Yes.
And everybody seems to like this book. And I've just finished it. And yeah, it's good fun.
It's really good fun. And I think in one sense, you know, the timing of this book was perfect, because everyone was suddenly in the UK was suddenly in lockdown.
Yes.
this book had been trailed. It was coming. And all we could see on our Twitter feed with people buying the book, or don't tell me anything about this book. Is this book worth reading?
Yeah.
It's an excellent book. It's a book that I sort of read, I think, literally across 2 days, but that would have been 2 full days of just sitting around doing nothing but reading the book.
Yeah.
It's for those of you who don't know, Craig Brown is sort of well-known author. He writes for Private Eye, which is a satirical magazine.
Yes. And he does the diaries for Private Eye, which are been a key part there for years and years and years, where every week he writes a diary in the style of somebody who's having their moment in pop culture, more or less.
Yes.
And he writes in their voice, and it's always very funny.
So if unrelenting cynicism and sarcasm is your thing, and I'm afraid
it is your thing, Stephen.
Yeah. don't give too much away.
Sorry.
Then this is the book for you. He wrote a book a few years ago about Princess Margaret.
I think
it's called like 99 Glimpses of Princess Margaret, and this book is sometimes referenced on websites as 150 Glimpses of the Beatles.
Yeah, that's kind of the subtitle of the book. And so the format of the book is worth talking about. It's 150. Yeah. It's interesting, because we've talked about this before, that, you know, we're kind of in this wave of Beatle books where people are rolling their own experience into the Beatles. So famously, we constantly talk about Dreaming the Beatles, which is kind of one of the spirit animals of this podcast is this Dreaming the Beatles book by Rob Sheffield, where he takes his own experience and reflects all his own thoughts through the Beatles. Craig Brown's book is, I don't know, would it be my first stop Beatles book as a biography, although it does tell the story in a vaguely chronological and ordered fashion.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend it as a sort of first book or even sort of introduction to it's not really biography. It's as you say, it kind of touches on cultural references and things that were happening around the Beatles, how they influenced. There's not a lot of new information going to come bubbling up to the surface here, but what he does with the information and how he presents it is a very interesting style. It's not quite like Rob Sheffield's book, which is still, you know, I don't know, maybe the best or one of the top three books I've read in the last few years, but it's very funny, it's very cynical.
Yes.
If you're easily offended as a Beatles fan, because you know there are sections when he's just mercilessly making fun of Beatle fandom, and I sat down and I started to read the first chapter, and which is a description of him going around the National Trust
properties,
Beatles childhood homes, and I just thought, I'm going to hate this book, because the people he's making fun of, I am the people that he's making fun of. But actually, it is so funny.
I think they're probably, if I did have a criticism of the book, they're the bits I don't like. Not because I'm a sensitive Beatles fan. I just thought, you're not really telling a Beatles story. You're kind of just getting your opinion piece out. And there's about half a dozen, that there's 150 very short chapters in this book.
Yeah.
And about half a dozen of them are him, you know, they're on these tour properties and they're, you know, he's kind of being very deeply cynical and picking fights and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, you're right. A lot of them are at the front and you think, oh, I don't want to read 400 pages of this. But then when he tells, like, there's one or two things in this that I hadn't heard before, particularly, you know, my favorite is Judy Garland turning up at Brian Epstein's house.
Yes,
it's just a story that I hadn't heard. And there's a couple of little bits and pieces like that. The chapter where Yoko appears is very mean, very anti-Yoko, in that sort of Private Eye, British public school boy kind of sneery tone. But there's a whole lot more positives than negatives in this book. And it's definitely worth, as again, the question of you start reading a Beatles book and you're like, do I have to? And you find yourself barreling through this one. No bother.
Yes, yes. The notes I have here are, I thought the treatment of Yoko was pretty shabby.
Yeah.
Some of those articles where he's being cynical and he's those are pieces that I thought would have worked very well as standalone pieces in Private Eye.
Yeah.
But when you, there are fewer, there are more positives than negatives. And when you slot those into the book, I think they jar slightly when you, you come upon them. The rest of the book has a certain tone, and it's extremely entertaining, and it's a very easy book to read.
Is very easy to read.
You know, it only came out a few weeks ago. I've just finished reading it. It's a book I think I'll probably read again in a couple of weeks.
And he paints a very grim picture of John in Weybridge. It really made me think about part of John's life, and how even though he's very mean about Yoko Ono, you kind of have to think, oh man, John was not happy in 65, 66 in that house. And my favorite fact, something I didn't know before, was that Ringo's house down the road was called Sunny Heights.
Yes.
Which is the most Ringo name for a house ever.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a metaphor. It's just Ringo's house is called Sunny Heights. And John would just tear off, I'm going to Sunny Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Ringo had a bar.
He did have a bar.
He had a full blown bar in the house. It is a book. It is a very enjoyable book. And as you say, it's sort of similar to Rob Sheffield's book in that he's kind of weaving its opinion.
Yes.
And one of the other things I noted down here is that a reaction to the Mark Lewison tune in approach that
I think there is no
nowhere else to go.
There's nowhere else to go for straight biography, really.
Yeah.
And so you have to have an angle. So maybe the angle is like Ken McNabb, okay, I'm going to look at month by month, or I'm going to look at it through my own personal reflections or personal opinions. I think that's and it's also, you could argue, it's part of the culture that we're in at the minute, that people are doing books and podcasts and blogs about, well, here's what I thought about this and here's how I experienced that.
Well, it is. What's interesting about the Craig Brown book in that context, and more so his book on Princess Margaret, he wrote about Princess Margaret, you know, who at one point was second in line to the throne.
Yeah.
He writes about her as a celebrity.
Yes.
Not as a member of the royal family, or not as this sort of deified or rarefied or something separate.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's also the approach he's taking.
And I think, it's a book that I never thought a book would make me want to go off and read a Princess Margaret book, but I do want to go off and read his Princess Margaret book now. So that's...
Well, I have to say I went straight on to...
have you got it?
I read it. I went on to Amazon and I kind of picked up a hardback copy for about £2.
And it's good.
It is very funny. It's very entertaining, but it's almost identical. You can see it's just the template for this book.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll get away with it a third time, but it's a book I'd write. It's a good book.
So that's Craig Brown's 1, 2, 3, 4, 150 Glimpses of the Beatles in Time, which has just come out in March of this year. And I think we're telling you that it's a good read. Upcoming books. There's three upcoming books that we might just mention. There's a book by the Beatles themselves. They're obviously hard at it on their typewriters right now, called Get Back, which is the first signifier that we're going to get some kind of Get Back activity later in the year. This seems to be a movie tie-in book, and I'm going to guess it's some kind of coffee table type thing, but we don't really know any more than that.
We don't know. I mean, the original album, Let It Be album, came as a deluxe box set with sort of big glossy photographs by Ethan Russell. Have you seen that book?
I've seen it online. I have it on PDF.
Very good. I mean, the photographs there are spectacular.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I do have a copy of that Let It Be box set, but the book is notoriously fragile.
Yeah, it falls apart.
It's almost one of those things where you have to look at the photographs using a mirror on a stick to avoid opening the book or splitting the cover. So I would like to see a lot of that.
Yes.
What I don't want is another anthology style massive coffee table book that takes two people to lift.
So that's coming out hopefully in October. Patty Boyd has a life has a book coming out called My Life Through a Lens. Yes, which is a biography.
Again, this is a, well, I think it's a sort of biography in photographs. I'm very fond of Patty Boyd, and she has carved out a sort of semi career as a photographer. But you think of the kind of opportunities that she's had, the events and the recording sessions and things that she's been present at. It should be interesting.
Okay.
She does have an autobiography that came out a few years ago called Wonderful Tonight.
Nice.
Which was sort of co-written by Penny Junor. I've read that book. It's entertaining enough, but it's just like riddled with factual errors.
Again, why don't these people call you up, Stephen?
I don't know. She in writing that book, she had a, you know, she's a participant. She has an agenda, but it's an interesting account because it sort of goes right across. Sort of the Beatles years, the Eric Clapton years.
So that's Patty Boyd, My Life Through a Lens. Obviously nothing to do with Robbie Williams' 1998 debut album, Life Through a Lens, unfortunately.
It's disappointing.
It is a bit disappointing. And then the third upcoming book is Fab Fools by Jem Roberts. And Jem's been in touch with you directly.
Yes, this is a book.
It's an interesting idea, this book.
Yes. I mean, this is what we've sort of talked about this before on the previous book's episode. We talked about Joe Gooden's book, Riding So High, which is looking at the story and looking at sort of drugging aspects. This is basically,
and Riding So High is definitely worth getting. That's a top book as well.
It's a very good book. It is a very good book. This is the story of the Beatles' adventures in comedy.
Yeah,
and you sort of think, well, but you know, you've got Hard Day's Night, you've got Help, you've got all of the sort of films, you've got John appearing with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. You've got the Bonzos. You've got all of that. You've got George. So this is a book I'm really looking forward to. Neil Innes was very much involved in this book, and his death at the end of 2019 sort of impacted on the timeline here. But I have been in touch with Jem, and he was saying that the manuscript has been reworked, partly as rising out of Neil Innes passing away. It has been delayed. The publication was already initially due for maybe April of this year. It's now been pushed back, hoping to get that out in September.
Okay.
But what I would say is, if you go on to the Fab Fools website, and we can put a link up to that, you can pre-order the book. And it's the pre-sales will sort of help towards support, the funding and things like clearing photo rights and things like that.
But it does sort of lead to this thing that we talked about a second ago, which is, well, where do you go after Lewison-style biographies? And you just take an angle. And so this is an interesting angle.
Yeah.
The Beatles were funny. They were so funny. That's like legitimately, genuinely funny. And so it's going to be an interesting take to see how, you know, both how funny they were, but also how they interacted with pure comedy itself.
Exactly. And the thing, you know, Jem Roberts has a fantastic pedigree.
Yeah.
You know, he's done biographies of Douglas Adams, Fry and Laurie, Blackadder. I'm sorry, I haven't a clue. So he has a fantastic pedigree here as a sort of comedy historian. So this is something I'm really looking forward to.
Good, good. So that'll be out later in this year. That's Fab Fools by Jem Roberts. Now, category number three, the big one, books we overlooked last year. And we're going to overlook some more books this year, but don't worry, we're going to do another one of these in 12 months' time. The big book we overlooked last year, I would say, is Michael Brown's Love Me Do.
We got so much feedback.
So much flack about it. And I have another confession to make, which was, when we did the podcast last year, I had never read Love Me Do. And that is somewhat unforgivable. And so I went off and rectified that. And it is a sensational book, Love Me Do. It really is one of a kind. Tell us about Love Me Do.
This is what Mark Lewison describes as possibly the best book written about the Beatles. And he did a foreword for the 1995 edition. Lennon said it was the best book about the Beatles, but essentially it's based on Michael Braun traveling with them in late 63, early 64. A lot of it is sort of fly on the wall in the dressing rooms, just recording what they were saying, giving you an insight into what that was like. You know, in some senses, the kind of slight squalor of the being on the road at that period in their career. What is most remarkable about this book is that it exists at all.
Yes. Yeah.
The one that he was given that kind of access, just as they were sort of taking off, and also that having produced the book, which is, you know, it's a warts and all description. And you think back in 63, 64, it's amazing that it was actually sort of given the green light.
There's a bunch of fortuitous things about this. So it's fortuitous that the time he is with the Beatles is the end of 63 to the start of 64. So he is there when they are, you know, when they're making those weeks from touring the provincial theatres of Britain to breaking through in America, you know, and he's recounting what they get up to when they get to New York. And so his timing is just purely fortuitous. The fact that he's embedded and that he has access is really striking. But you're right. It's you know, the Beatles are smoking, drinking, cursing. They're really rough around the edges. And it's like when the book comes out, there's perhaps... It's interesting that the book isn't huge. The book comes out when the Beatles are the biggest thing in the world. And in some ways, the book... it kind of gets underplayed maybe at the time where they're like, oh, you know, they weren't cursing that much type stuff. It's you would have thought if you were a publisher releasing a Beatles on the road biography book in 64, 65, that it would have had a longer impact. And it's sort of become kind of a connoisseur's book in a way.
Yes, yes, it is. I mean, it doesn't cover a huge period of time. It's not sort of packed full of interesting facts. It's just a fly on the wall look at them taking off. And it's one of the interesting things that Lewison remarks on in his introduction to the 95 edition is that the NME at the time called it an image killer. So there must have been a perception even then, this is not you know, how you would present this band if this was an official book. It was not mentioned in the Beatles Monthly fan magazine at the time.
Oh, really?
So they're not actively promoting it. So by that state, by the time the book hits the shelves, I suppose the official narrative had moved on. There's an official history, if you like, starting to be written. David Hepworth had a theory.
He loves a good theory.
He loves a good theory. But David Hepworth wrote, and I'm just going to quote about it. He said, it's as though the window is just closing on their real lives, and henceforth we will only be able to see them through the clouds of myth.
Right.
And I think that's exactly it. It's the last glimpse at the people at the Beatles as individuals. Henceforth, they would be, in air quotes, the Beatles.
Well, it's also a view of, it's probably the only bit of reportage we have of the Beatles when they still had something to achieve. They're still going somewhere.
And yes.
There's a switch that gets flicked in 64, essentially when they break America, where, as you say, they just become the Beatles. They're just huge. And there's still a mountain to climb when Michael Brown gets on board to start taking notes for this book, and he's there as they reach the top of the mountain. So it's a totally unique piece of time.
It is. As I say, it's not, you're not going to get a lot of facts here, but you're going to get a really interesting snapshot.
Yes.
Of that, as you say, they're still climbing the mountain.
Yeah. And John Lennon said he liked the book because he wrote How We Were, which was Bastards. And there isn't a bit of truth to that. I mean, you're certainly reading this and you're thinking, well, I guess they're not the Shadows, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're drinking, they're swearing, they're making jokes. They're making some very politically incorrect jokes. But again, Hepworth says, you know, they don't come over as bastards. They're just four blokes from unremarkable backgrounds who suddenly find themselves bulleted into a position nobody'd ever been in before. And this is that somehow I have to deal with it.
And the author himself, Michael Brown, he died in 1997. He had quite a life.
He had. I mean, this is. I didn't know much about him, but I went back and sort of looked up his obituary from 1997, and The Independent in the UK described him as a zealot of the counterculture. So he worked with Stanley Kubrick whenever he was making Lolita, Dr. Strangelove. Supposedly the Beatles wrote Paperback Writer about him. He moved to California. He was with Roman Polanski the night in London, the night that Polanski got the call to say that his wife had been been murdered. The description of his funeral is quite something in the obituary. It said, it's unclear whether he was 55 or 60. He was buried in his ubiquitous sweat clothes, surrounded by chanting Buddhist monks from his sister's ashram. And appropriately enough, several fistfights broke out around the body of this arch manipulator and masterful provocateur. He was an unknown legend in his time, and certainly he seems to just have been there at all of these.
That's how I want to go, Stephen. Make a note of that.
Yeah, a fist fight at your funeral.
With Mull of Kintyre playing in the background. If you could make it so, that'd be great.
If I'm there, I'll make it so.
So that's one really important book that we overlooked last year. Michael Brown's Love Me Do. Dig it out. You can get it on Kindle, even if you can't find a hard copy. One or two other books worth mentioning. Richard Unterberger's Unreleased Beatles is, you know, the Lewison books are very well known. Unterberger's book maybe is a bit of a fan's fan book, but it is an extraordinary trawl. It's called The Unreleased Beatles through recordings, films, television, everything the Beatles did that we haven't seen or that we don't know about. He catalogues it in this book.
It is. I mean, it's a fantastic reference book. Yeah. You know, this is not a book you're going to sit down and read from cover to cover. Yeah. It's not a narrative, but it's a superb reference book.
I found it great back in January 2019. I decided I'd read it day by day for every day of the Get Back sessions, and it's very good for that. That's
so you.
That's so me. Well, I know Mark Lewison sat down and listened to the live tapes every day. My contribution was just to read the associated Richie Unterberger entry for the day. But it's a great book, and it's one of those books you sometimes see piled high at the back of a HMV or a Golden Discs in Ireland here record store. Yes. You know, those kind of books that somewhere.
I think I got my copy in FOP, I was going to say.
Yeah. So it's well worth picking up, The Unreleased Beatles by Richie Unterberger. A book I love that I've read two or three times is a book by Clinton Halen, who's a fantastic writer. Every single book he writes is well worth reading. But it's a book called The Act You've Known for All These Years. And you've read that, haven't you?
I have read that. I seem to have two copies of that in two different editions. Again, this seems to be a book that I constantly see this book.
Yes.
In sort of bargain basement.
Yes.
Shops and things like that.
You know? And it has a Sergeant Pepper alluding cover on it.
Yes. Slightly misleading.
It's interesting because it's called The Act You've Known for All These Years. I think I picked it up thinking it was going to be a nice view of Pepper in 67. And what he posits is that actually Pepper was the end, and what was really happening was the beginning of the next phase of music, and particularly he hangs it on almost the Beatles handing over to Pink Floyd. You know, Pink Floyd feature heavily in this book, that while they're doing Pepper, Floyd with Syd Barrett are starting their journey. And he makes a very good point, and he kind of looks at that Pink Floyd, the Move axis, you know, so Pink Floyd and the Move kind of started from the same point and then went in very different directions.
The Move became
the Move became, we all know they became ELO, and
thank you and good night.
So this is yes, welcome to ELO Way, the Move podcast. Yes, but The Act You've Known for All These Years by Clinton Halen is a great book, and it has in the opening paragraph, which is quite a funny line. He says, "When the Beatles released Sergeant Pepper to a suspecting world." which is a nice way of putting it, because we're kind of told, nobody was expecting Sergeant Pepper. And actually he's like, no, everyone was expecting Sergeant Pepper.
Everyone was waiting,
Yes. And then the last book in terms of books we overlooked, you were going to mention Chris O'Dell's book, but is that about the Beatles, or is that her biography book, or what is...
This is a very strange book. Chris O'Dell was essentially started off as one of the girls working in the Apple building. You know, she said used to get their lunch, answer phones, that sort of thing. She then became friendly with Patty Boyd. She started moving in those circles. Ultimately, she was present at the sort of unraveling of George and Patty's marriage. She was very present at the unraveling of Ringo's marriage to Maureen. It's a pretty kind of salacious tale, but it's almost despite myself, I couldn't stop turning the pages on this book. I mean, yeah. She's kind of been everywhere. George wrote a song about her. You know, it's just a if you just want a you know, this is a holiday book. This is a book take to the beach if we're ever allowed to go to the beach. it's Ringo Starr is the godfather to her son, so she was an insider, and it's a little bit kind of self-serving, but you know, they went on to work with Bob Dylan, with the Stones. She appears on the front cover of Exile on Main Street. You know, she has tales to tell. Yeah,
she does, and I mean, as I said, it's kind of a fun book if you're in the mood for that kind of thing. And you know, she was having an affair with Ringo. She was at Ringo's house when Harrison admitted to Ringo that he was having an affair with Ringo's wife Maureen. So that's how many people, that's not a love triangle, that's a love square, isn't it?
Of
all
least.
Sorts of proportions. Maybe a pentagon, who knows?
Many sides.
And what's that Chris O'Dell book called?
This is the best or worst title. It's called Miss O'Dell, My Hard Days and Long Nights with the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and the women they loved.
Whew, that's quite a mouthful.
It's all gone on there. And there was another book I wanted to mention in books that we overlooked, and this is just because people had been getting in touch about Brian Epstein, and
leads us into people in books about people in the Beatles universe. So Chris O'Dell was in the Beatles universe,
I guess that kind of leads into sequence.
No, because they kind of do overlap, because there is a certain tranche of books about people who are either directly related to the Beatles or indirectly related to the Beatles. But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you. Brian Epstein is obviously key.
Yeah, I mean, what is surprising is perhaps that there aren't more biographies or more books about Brian Epstein. You know, he was so central to the start of their career, and arguably his death impacted so profoundly on their career that I was surprised when I have two books about Brian Epstein, and that seemed to me to be all there is.
Yeah, there's not a lot. One of them is the Arena documentary book, The Brian Epstein Story.
Yes, so this was in the UK, Arena, which is a BBC documentary program, did an episode on Brian Epstein, and there was a tie-in book, and that's quite good. It's a kind of light trot through his story. Ray Coleman has a biography of Brian Epstein, which is very good. It's very thorough. It's a very solid book. It a little bit superficial, perhaps, you know, dealing with sort of the darker side of Brian's character. But the Epstein family were involved in the book, so perhaps that's
why it is the way it is.
But it is a sort of insider's book. It does talk about his sexuality and about how this impacted on him and his kind of darker, sort of that slightly tortured side.
Okay.
So it is a book. It's focused very much on Epstein. It's not a sort of an appendix to a book about the Beatles. It stands on its own right. So I would recommend it.
So that's Ray Coleman's book, and it's just called Brian Epstein, isn't it? It's just called Brian Epstein. And Ray Coleman's also wrote a book about John Lennon, didn't he, as well? So he does have Beatle biography. Yes. Kudos.
Good credentials.
So when we do look at this broader books about people in the Beatles universe, they go from people who are obviously intimately involved in the story, like Brian Epstein himself, to people maybe more peripherally involved, but whose kind of existence makes sense in a world where the Beatles exist. And one is House of Nutter, which is a pretty wild book. It's a good book.
I really like this book. This is a book. I wasn't sure, you know, how much Beatle content there was going to be.
Yeah.
It's really, I think, it's a sort of biography of Tommy Nutter, essentially, who was I suppose, would you say he was a tailor? He was a designer, fashion designer. Yeah. big lapels. My top trivia fact is that three of the Beatles turned up independently for the Abbey Road cover session, all wearing clothes or suits designed by Tommy Nutter.
Yeah.
So he was right at the heart. I won't, if people are going to get this book, I will not spoil anything that goes on in this book, but there are some really quite, at least to me, surprising revelations.
Yeah, it's the story of Tommy Nutter, and also his brother's involved in the story as well. Yeah. And it's a very specific ride through that kind of late 60s London period. And the interesting thing about Tommy Nutter is that he kind of overlaps into another book I was going to mention, which is a book called Hello Darlings, the Authorised Biography of Kenny Everett by James Hogg and Robert Sellers. And that's a biography about, you know, you either know or don't know who Kenny Everett is. So if you're of a certain age, Kenny Everett was, you know, a radio DJ and or a television comedy star in the 70s and 80s. Back in the 1960s, he was a pirate radio DJ, and he was very much fated by the Beatles. But he had a, you know, a very curious life. And one of the things that he got involved in was he was essentially someone who didn't know they were gay or was a closeted homosexual, and he gets involved in a relationship with Peter Brown from the Beatles offices, as in Peter Brown, called To Say You Can Make It Okay from the Ballad of John and Yoko. And in the aftermath of Brian Epstein's death, Peter Brown dumps Kenny Everett for Tommy Nutter. So there's an odd kind of synchronicity to what's going on there. But the Hello Darlings book, Kenny has an awful lot of overlap into what the Beatles were doing. He was embedded in their last US tour, so we get to hear about that. He regularly would interview the Beatles, particularly John and George. And he claims to have been there when he got caught in a rain shower out in John's house, which led to the lyric from I Am the Walrus. He was sat in the English. He was sat in the I Am the Walrus recording sessions, and John says, "Hey, do you remember Kenny? We were on the golf course, and it rained on us." So there's a lot of Beatles overlap in the authorized biography of Kenny Everett. It's quite a story.
And he had an input into the last of those Christmas albums.
That is correct as well.
Christmas singles.
The last two Christmas singles were edited by Kenny Everett. One of them's under his real name, Morris Cole. So if you're like me, and you know, Kenny Everett was 80s Kenny Everett, where he was a BBC TV star. You know, the whole arc of Kenny's life is quite fascinating. It's a pity he's not still around today. I think he'd be he's sorely missed.
Yeah. On just briefly going back to that House of Nutter book, I didn't mention who wrote it. It's a guy called Lance Richardson.
Oh, yes.
And the full name of the title of the book is House of Nutter, The Rebel Tailor of Savile Row. So if you have an interest in the sort of swinging 60s generally, that's a great book.
That is a good book. There's two more we'll mention about books in the Beatle universe. One is Jenny Boyd's book. And Jenny Boyd is Patty Boyd's sister. And she has a few stories to tell as well.
She does. This is a book has only just recently come out. Jenny Boyd, she was Patty Boyd's sister. She was a model in her own right. This really tells the story of primarily her relationship with Mick Fleetwood, to whom she was married twice. it's pretty up and down. It's called Jennifer Juniper is the name of the book. Because Donovan, anybody remember Donovan?
He's the guy who helped the Beatles write The White Album.
He doesn't like to talk about
that. He doesn't like to talk about that, yeah.
But he wrote Jennifer Juniper for her. So it's an interesting book. She I think now has a PhD in counselling psychology. So there's a little bit of psychoanalysis going on in the book. But she was there in that sort of mid 60s period, the Rishikesh period. So it's interesting for that. It's a book I might wait for the paperback, but it's an interesting read.
And there's one other book which you put my way, which really does deal with that kind of 1960s universe, which is Sean Levy's Ready, Steady, Go.
Yes.
And that's kind of broader than just the Beatles universe. It's a real 60s book.
It's a real 60s book. The subtitle is Swinging London and the Invention of Cool.
Yeah.
And I love this book because it really, it's pretty densely written. It's full of information, but it really sets a lot of the background context for what's going on. You know, if you're reading books about the Beatles, they're about the Beatles, obviously. This, the Beatles are here. It talks about Epstein. It talks about the Beatles. It talks about Carnaby Street. It sets the overall context.
And it's very good at that sort of pre-Beatles period of, you know, 1960 to 63, about this, you know, this kind of story that gets told a million times about, you know, how the nature of class was changing and the nature of access and opportunity was changing. He covers that really well.
Yes, it's really a sort of cultural and social history as much as anything.
So they are books in the Beatle universe. That's Ready, Steady, Go by Sean Levy. So the final thing we said we'd talk about are books to avoid. And we're going to hand over now to Stephen as the arbiter of who wins this year's award for the books that we shouldn't really be reading.
And I think you say at the outset this was the Philip Norman.
This is the Philip Norman Award for books we don't want to read about the Beatles. And this year's recipient of the Philip Norman Award, Stephen,
is Jeffrey Giuliano.
Well done, Jeffrey. Fantastic. Now we were going through this before the thing. I don't think I've read any of his books, and now I'm never going to read any of his books.
Good for you. You should really try and stick to that. Arguably it's not fair to put Jeffrey Giuliano and Philip Norman in the same category. Philip Norman, let me say, Philip Norman is a respected journalist.
Yes.
He is a well-known author. I don't care for his writing style, and he's very sort of opinionated. Jeffrey Giuliano is another animal entirely. He's churned out maybe 20 books. The one that I first came across was Dark Horse, The Private Life of George Harrison, which was published in 1990, and he used a quote from George to promote this.
What was the quote? George, get out of my house.
No, the quote was, this guy knows more about my life than I do.
That's a classic George passive-aggressive, mean kind of...
But it was said in those... It was like, you know, this is a terrible book. This is an awful book. It's as if this guy thinks he knows more about... But he took this out of context. And this so, the answer would say nothing. But this prompted... he describes Paul as vacuous and shallow. He just lays into to everyone. The quote was from George was, I met him briefly. I don't even know what year it was. I met him at a friend's house for maybe 30 minutes. He was in the room. Right. And out of that, he sort of parlays into this book. So he's written a book, Lennon in America.
Yeah.
Which was sort of designed to create a bit of scandal, a bit like the Goldman book.
Yeah.
And it's just this wild supposition. He claims to have read the John Lennon's diaries that from the Dakota years, etc. It's just terrible books, and there are quite a few of them. So I would stay well clear of anything by Jeffrey Giuliano.
It's interesting. You were telling me there that when he was called Paul McCartney vacuous and shallow, that it was Olivia Harrison that came to Paul's defense.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, she was prompted to write to the Guardian newspaper, called herself Mrs. George, signed the letter Mrs. George. basically, laying into Giuliano, defending Paul, saying, he misused that jokey quote from George to publicize the book, and really, really advising people or warning people to stay clear.
So Mrs. George writes, to judge Paul McCartney as vacuous and shallow after all Paul has written and offered to the world is surely the judgment of an arrogant mind. Like a starving dog, Giuliano scavenges his heroes, picking up bits of gristle and sinew along the way. I think I know what side she's on.
Yeah, she doesn't hold back.
Yeah, no, that's pretty awesome. There's one or two other books that really aren't that great that might need to get a mention. Jeff Emmerich's book isn't great. Here, there, and everywhere.
This is a book that should be great.
Yes.
You know, like Peter Asher, he's there, he's in the recording sessions, he's in the studio.
Yeah.
My difficulty with this book is he is incredibly dismissive of both George and Ringo.
Yes.
Incredibly biased. And again, I think this is at the time this book came out, I think he was working with Paul. He sees himself very much as in Paul's camp. And what should be a fantastic, objective, insightful view of these recording sessions really, I think, is tainted by that.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's an odd book, and I think if it was your first Beatles book, it would give you a very odd impression of what's going on. It is a bit of a lost opportunity, I think, unfortunately.
It is. I think that's probably exactly the way to describe it. It's a lost opportunity.
So for those of you keeping count, you know, there's a good number of books here that we didn't touch upon last year that are definitely worth picking up. Ken McNabb's And in the End, Michael Braun's Love Me Do, Richie Unterberger's Unreleased Beatles, Clinton Halen's Act You've Known for All These Years, Craig Brown's 1, 2, 3, 4, House of Nutter, and Hello Darlings, and Ready, Steady, Go for the Beatles Universe. All these things are well worth a punt of your time, if any of you happen to have any free time at the minute to pick up a book and read it.
These are the ones we recommend.
These are the ones we recommend. And, you know, we look... Yeah,
and I was going to say, and more to follow.
There'll be more to follow. There's more coming this year. Fab Fools is definitely one to look out for. But you know, this is a gift that keeps on giving. So I'm sure we'll do a Books 2021 episode in due course to try and figure out what we missed and what's come out in the meantime.
Yeah, I would guess there'll be a book or two in 2021.
I think so. And it's probably worth mentioning before we sign off that Mark Lewison has put out a statement about when Volume 2 is going to come.
Is it next week?
No, it's not. Well, before, you know, as we record this, we're in our lockdown times, folks. But he put out a statement at the start of the year saying that 2023 was sort of not impossible, which would be 10 years after the release of Volume 1. And maybe there's been a little bit of extra work done in the last couple of weeks, who knows. But 2023 is what he has signified as being the earliest release date possible for Volume 2 of all these years.
You're much younger than me. I fear I'm not going to make it.
Oh, come on. Stay away from the light, Stephen. It's going to be worth it. But obviously, that's the big one that we're all waiting for. So there'll be lots of books to talk about in the meantime. But hopefully that's something to keep you all going for the next 12 months. So we'll put up a list of these books online. But again, as we said at the start of this episode, when we talked about books last year, loads of people weighed in to tell us what they thought. So tell us what you think. Again, we're available on Twitter, at Beatles Pod. We're also on Facebook. If you ask to join the group, Stephen might let you in. And, you know, we're happy to get in touch and talk to you all in all the normal ways. But for Nothing Is Real, I'm Jason Carty.
I'm Stephen Cockcroft.
And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is powered by Acast.